We're back with more of Lake Effect Now. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. There are maybe a lot of unlikely things that had to come together to bring writer Sarah Baum to Milwaukee recently. Baum's first novel, Spill, Simmer, Falter, Wither, was published to critical acclaim in her home country of Ireland.
But its release in the United States came a year later. It has an unusual style, the narrative second person, told by the main character, Ray, to his dog, One Eye. And Ray himself is an unlikely protagonist, a troubled loner whose backstory isn't at all clear as the book opens in a gritty small town on the Irish coast. Over the course of the novel, Ray and One Eye hit the road for reasons that we won't give away here.
Milwaukee was one of just three cities that Baum, who was also a visual artist, visited on her U.S. tour. She joined us in the studio. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So I gather this book started with your own dog?
Yes, it did. It's funny, looking at the cover now, it's a very good likeness to the dog himself, even though the missing eye is kind of, it's silhouetted out. But yeah, I adopted him in about 5 years ago now. And he was, I don't know how it works here, but at home, the rescue society tend to put up like little signs in jumble shop windows. Jumble shop, again, I don't think is a thing here. Is it like a flea market?
They mostly fall under the category of antiques shops, but some of them are really just kind of junk shops.
Yeah, junk shops, really. Yeah, charity shops. So the shop would be, you know,
like a thrift store is what we might call it.
Yes, a thrift store. I think that's the one I'm looking for. Yeah, that sounds right. But anyway, and just like the character in the book, who finds this dog's picture in the window of a thrift store window, I saw his picture, and I've always been attracted to like damaged things. You know, when I was a kid, I always wanted that cuddly toy that had an ear missing or a bit of fluff because I felt sorry for it. I thought no one else will ever buy it if I don't rescue it now. And then in later life, I applied this logic to my first dog. My first sort of dog in adult life, and insisted. My boyfriend was horrified, and his argument was, if we're getting a one-eyed dog, then you have to let me call him Winky, which I think means something else here.
it doesn't
at home. So yeah, we have a one-eyed dog called Winky, upon whom the book is based.
if that was the spark that got you writing the story, where did Ray, your narrator and really the center of this universe, come from?
Yeah, well, I think really because the dog rescued me. I was going through just a sad patch. You know, I studied visual art and worked in the arts, as did my boyfriend, but Ireland went into recession in 2008, so some time ago now, and it was just very hard. The arts funding went out of the arts anyway. To make a long story short, it was very hard to work in our field. So we moved from Dublin down the country because we got squeezed out, high rents. And I wasn't doing anything much. I had some crappy part-time jobs. I was hanging around a lot in this small village by the sea and sort of driving my car around. My boyfriend had a job then, so I was alone a lot, and it was just me and the dog. And I think in many ways I was, just struggling to do normal things. And if it wasn't for the dog, I mightn't have gotten out of bed in the morning, you know. But dogs don't understand. You just need to feed them and walk them. And he kept me going in that way. And the man came about because I wanted the dog to be a thing that saved my protagonist. And I thought it was more believable and it was a better story if the man really, really needed to be saved. You know, he wasn't just an art school graduate who was a bit depressed, but someone who'd been sort of tucked away his whole life and was very isolated in a small community. And so he was a better protagonist than me.
And really one of the tensions of the story is who's rescuing who here?
Yes, yeah, precisely, because, I mean, we use the term rescue dog. Do you use that?
Yeah, absolutely,
that
yes.
Too? Yeah. And by taking this thing that, you know, came damaged and wanting to fix it, and I did this as well, but ultimately the story is the dog saves the man or helps the man, saves him, and then changes his life, sort of perhaps ultimately destroys him, if that's not giving away too much.
Well, and he thinks of himself as too old to start over, but in some ways the dog represents, if not a completely new beginning, at least something of a new beginning for him.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and helps him. I think the whole book is spoken from the point of view of the man to his dog. And I think in many ways, you know, the dog does nothing. It's just a dog. But by speaking to the dog, his whole story comes out. The story of Ray, the protagonist is called Ray, his father and his background. And he's sort of in many ways explaining to the dog why he ended up the way he did. And it's a different, they're things he'd never articulated before and articulates them because something is listening and perhaps because something that can't actually understand is listening because of the dog. They're things you'd never tell a person, I suppose.
Were you talking to your dog as you had all those moments alone with him or her?
Yeah, and it was when I realized, because I tried the book, second person is like notoriously perhaps the most difficult tense to
You don't
write.
See it a lot.
No, and I was trying to avoid it. So I tried it first in like first person dog, which didn't really work. It might have been a good short story, but dogs just don't know enough to sustain that voice. And then I tried it first person Ray, and my realization came, I suppose, because I was talking to my own dog. And it's a particular kind. You're more honest and free-flowing than you would be if you were talking to a person, but then you also have to articulate yourself better than if you were just talking to yourself. So I realized it was a really particular.
You're able to paint this very vivid picture of the sort of remote rural places that Ray and One-Eye travel through. How much of that is informed by your own background as a visual artist, and how much was just, you know, the surroundings you were seeing every day?
Yeah, well, a bit of both. It's very much based around the places I was seeing every day, and the title is the season. Spill is for spring, simmers for summer, falters for autumn, withers for winter. And it's written in those four sections. And with the first draft, I really wanted to write it season by season, so to write spill in spring and so on, because I wanted to describe nature changing out my window as it changed. It was really important to me to get the names of flowers and trees and leaves and everything right. So it helped me to structure it in that way. And it was me looking. But I also, I guess, the visual background means that I begin with an image and then I describe it, and that's how I write. Then I have writing.
Well, and it seems so much more authentic to do it that way than to be writing in fall and trying to research what you saw in the spring.
Yes, yeah. I did trip out of, because then with subsequent drafts, it didn't take the full year to do the next draft, you know. So I was kind of falling out. I was like, what's that thing?
The word I have seen a lot of people evoke in their writing about your writing is empathy. There are a lot of Rays out there that people probably don't give a lot of thought to.
Yes. Yeah. He's a strange man. And definitely every village in rural Ireland has one. And I'm sure it's the same in America. And, you know, cities on every street corner. And they're people that we all steer around and are suspicious of. And I wanted to get inside the mind of someone who really was perfectly harmless and kind and interesting in his own way, but was just so afraid of interacting with people because he was so used to being brushed aside by them, I suppose. But people have said to me since, oh, I know this guy, people at home, I suppose. But they're like every village in rural Ireland, and like you see him sort of, you know, limping down the road with his little dog, and you know he's only gone out today because he has to walk the dog, and you know he's probably an alcoholic.
Well, and one of the things that it brought to my mind is, and I guess I don't know, do people go trick-or-treating on Halloween in Ireland?
Yes, yeah.
So there's always one house in the neighborhood that people skip.
Yeah, that's it. That's Ray's house, that they're more frightened of him than they're...
How much of Ray's house was your own house?
Yes, all of it, pretty much.
Including the salmon color?
No, the house itself is actually a bright blue. So I still struggle to, you know, why did I choose salmon pink? Bright blue is actually quite good. I didn't want to make it too conspicuous. I don't live there anymore now, so I can be sort of... But it's funny how... I thought that I was disguising the place. And there's an oil refinery, quite a prominent oil refinery, in this town on the edge of it. And my mother told me, this is after it had been published, she's like, Sarah, there's only one oil refinery in the whole of Ireland. I hadn't known this. I thought there were loads of them.
In some ways, the journey that Ray and One-Eye take in the second half of the book, and again, we don't want to give too much away here, but they take a journey. It almost feels like it plays out in a post-apocalyptic landscape, I thought. And it's not, but maybe when we think of what Ray has endured, is it kind of his own personal post-apocalypse?
Yes, I think that's maybe it, that it's the world that he's seeing is being seen through his own eyes, and he's sort of self-destructing in a way. So he doesn't see perhaps the more beautiful side of it. It was also the seasons. Actually, the latter half of the book, of course, is Falter and Wither, so autumn and winter. And rural Ireland's like pretty bleak at that time of year. Everything is grey and mud and dead. It's a good observation, actually. I hadn't thought about that much.
So sort of a naturally dystopian kind of landscape.
Yes, yeah. Someone actually compared it to Cormac McCarthy's The Road the other day.
Just a nice comparison,
quite so
I suppose.
Extreme, but yeah, I took it as a compliment.
the book has, of course, been out in Ireland and Europe for a long time, more than a year. It must be a little strange to be speaking about it in this country now, as though it's a new title. Knowing the way publishing works, I imagine it has been out of your hands for 2 or 3 years at this point.
Yeah, I finished writing it actually at the end of 2013, and it was published in Ireland in early 2015. And it's the translation rights have sold in quite a few European countries, but it hasn't actually been published there yet. But it's had such a strange appeal that I never expected. I mean, the rights have sold in Japan, in Serbia, in Hungary, you know, in places I couldn't have imagined. And I can't get over how people seem to be embracing it in the US, you know, the publishers first, and then it's been on like Indies Introduces. It was picked for that series, and Barnes & Noble have picked it for their Discover New Voices. And it's so hard to imagine how something that's such a particular voice and set in such a really small, you know, middle of nowhere can appeal to so many people. I'm just baffled.
Well, and the book got a lot of attention in Ireland and the UK, especially in the guise of this being your first novel. But from here on, you never get to be called a new novelist again. So how do you deal with the weight of expectations that happens now?
Poorly. No, well, I suppose I'm lucky in that I've you know, signed a two-book deal, but much of the second book was written before the first book even came out, let alone did well. So I like to think that the second book is largely driven by the same despair that drove the first book. And who's to say where it goes from here? I think it's done wonderfully well, but you know, it hasn't won the Man Booker or anything. So it's done well enough to encourage me, but perhaps not to just flaw me altogether.
And it's been some time since those days, but I'm interested in the story of the clay dogs you made in between the book's completion and the book's publishing.
Oh yeah, I was going to mention that. I never know who's like had a sneaky peek at my website. I made it was the strange lapse of time between actually having the book accepted to be published and then the book actually appearing as a book, and the lapse of time was 381 days, so over a year, and I was so afraid, I suppose, that the book would die or that I wanted to keep it alive in some way, so I made these little clay dogs. My background is visual art anyway, so I always have materials hanging around the house. So I'd make them literally in front of the television at night, and one a day, or you know, sometimes two or three, and then none for another few days. And they're all slightly different. They're all handmade. And then when the book was published, the idea was to give them away in the spirit of a gift, because I couldn't believe that anyone would buy a book that I'd written. So I then disseminated the dogs. So they're all over the place now. I was going to bring them over here. And then I thought, they look so strange. I'm like, what if the customs official go through my bag? And because they're clay, like when you snap them, they're powder, you know, they're white powder inside. So for these reasons, I decided not to bring some over to the States. But it was maybe stupid of me.
Maybe you should visit an art supply store while you're here.
Yeah, make my Milwaukee dogs.
There you go.
I do actually. I do this. I have this other project going whereby I collect patterns from all the places that I am in the world. So every time I stop in a new place, I do still take out the notebook and draw something. So
the patterns are inspired by what you see.
Yeah, they're just patterns from the surroundings, and I have a book of them.
Have you established what the Milwaukee pattern is yet?
Oh, well, I'm staying in a hotel that's full of patterns, like really interesting ones, which is wonderful. But railings, I get a lot of railings, a lot of like just upholstery is brilliant, wallpaper, really boring stuff.
I feel bad for the room you're in right now.
Yeah, modern buildings.
And so, as we were talking about how the visual art influenced your background as a visual artist, influenced your writing, do you find the reverse happens now, that the experience you have as a writer then turns around and somehow informs your visual art?
Well, it's funny because this project, the pattern book, I call it, is directly come about because I'm now, like, for 5 or 6 years, I traveled nowhere at all because I had no money. I was just a struggling writer. And now since the book was published, I have all these opportunities to travel. So the pattern book follows this trail of, less so overseas. I'm going to a few good places later this year. But last year, I just did an awful lot of small arts festivals around Ireland. And that was just wonderful. So the pattern book is a diary of sorts, but it's a visual diary. And it came about directly as a result of my writing, my book.
That's terrific. Do you look at Winky in a different light now?
Like it. Whenever I give out to the dog, my boyfriend goes, "That you owe that dog a lot of."
Has he come around to Winky then?
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. I think the dog, in a typical kind of like parental way, I'd say the dog loves my boyfriend more now because I'm like the disciplinarian and he just gets treated all the time.
Well, Sarah Baum, it's a remarkable book. And thank you so much for spending some time with us and sharing the story.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a strange event that I would be in Milwaukee, so it's an honor.
Well, I hope it's not the last time.
Well, so do I. Like it.
Irish writer Sarah Baum is the author of Spill, Simmer, Falter, Wither. It's her first novel. Milwaukee was one of just 3 cities she visited as part of her U.S. book tour.
It is not Baum's first time in the Midwest, however. She studied creative writing for a time at the University of Iowa's International Writing Program.